What is different about today than, let's say, the first day of unleavened bread? That's coming to the end, right? Okay. Out of bondage, okay.
A time to reflect and look back at what you just went through.
Eric and I were so... I had accidentally eaten bread, but Eric had beat me, and he felt very proud of himself that he hadn't any bread or leaven. And we cleaned the house out, and I felt good about that, but I know that it's deeper than just taking out a loaf of bread. And so I thought to myself, I think, I really want, this is my second time experiencing this with the group, but I really want to take notes, and I want to be able to be militarily ready for these particular feasts, methodically, because I took down notes yesterday about how the setup, when he told them to come set up their tents, and what when she put on the south, the east, the north, and the west. And I felt like, you know, God is very methodical, so I felt like I needed to start to focus on that so that the next feast that I can go into, I want to be ready. I'm a soldier. I'm a Berean, and I want to be ready.
Berean. She's a Berean. What I want to try to present to you is how this particular day is a direct reflection upon you, not just what took place back then. When you, on the first day of unleavened, it covers chapter 13, 14, and 15, and 16, very in depth of what God said to do on the very beginning of the days of unleavened, and what to institute and what to bring about. It's just a little thing of unleavened bread. He brought in a lot of things he wanted the Israelites to start doing. And some of the very phrases that he began with, which we kind of don't understand, it reflects what the Apostle Paul said. Remember last Sabbath I talked about the sincerity. It really is the time of purity and a time of truth. It's not, these are not the days that you get sin out of your life. And don't get me wrong. If you have sin, purge it. But at the very same time, it's same thing to put into it that we need to have a pure heart, a pure mind, and a pure thoughts and pure actions. And that's what these 7 days represent. Today is the end of those particular 7 days of period. Now we know that when the Israelites left, what was the name of the place they first met at? Sukkot, place called Sukkot. And then, after Sukkot, where was the next place? I don't expect you to remember this. Etam. And it's on the edge of the wilderness. Alright? And that's where God said, I am not going to take them the way of the easy road. Nice highway. Nice travel. I'm going to take them on a very hard, long, and difficult journey. And so they walked across the Sinai Peninsula. Now it says there in that scripture, the 13th chapter, by day and by night, by day and by night, they moved and they moved and they moved. Now sometimes we look back and say, we can't do this, human beings. True, we cannot. But God could give them the physical strength, continuing. But it was not the most wonderful time in their world. It was a hardship. And so they went through these things, and God had them go through certain. And the next place they stopped was at the Red Sea. And that's when that took place, the crossing of the Red Sea. Now, how do you relate to that? Because you weren't there. You don't, how do you connect with that particular message? Because it's all physical. Right? So let's go to Exodus, the 14th chapter for just a moment. Exodus, the 14th chapter. I'm going to read some of the areas in this chapter. I'm not going to read everything that's there. Because most of you already know what's there. Start in verse 1, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, saying, so what did he say? Speak unto the children of Israel that they turn and encamp before Pahahurot. We'll talk about what that means. Between Migdol and the sea, over against, and this is the old King James, we'll talk about the language later, Baal Zephon, before it ye encampment by the sea. Now, first of all, what the word Pi Chachorot means, means a plurality of a gorge that took place. And generally, it's from two rivers coming in, or even a river coming in, and splitting it and having two openings up. Had since dried up, and then Migdol is a word meaning that it was elevated. So there was a land that was elevated above the water. Now, in this opening, there was a place called Baal Zephon. How many of you know what Baal Zephon is? And he knows because I told him. Okay, what does it mean?
Lord of the North.
Now, it's important because what I want to get to point is that when you go there, well, you won't go there, I didn't go there. Right now it's a famous resort. I mean, it's a gorgeous place. It's very, very expensive to go there and have a evening out. It's a very expensive place. Anyway, when you look at this thing, and actually in Hebrew, when it says there that, first of all, it says here in this Old English, where it says, Baal Chorot, between Miguel and the sea, over against Baal Zephon. That word against means in the face of Baal Zephon. So they're going to be at the face of Baal Zephon, which is, by the way, is on the north side. Now, if you ever looked at a map of Israel, I mean, of the Sinai Peninsula, where that we had talked about this some years ago, where there's a big opening and then there's a little narrow strip going north. And there's a little bit of sand there, a little bit of seashore, and they would face up against that one. And that area is called the Lord of the North, or Baal Zephon. And then he said, now, you are going to stand in front of this Baal Zephon. Now, with that in mind, we know what kind of took place, right? We know that God says, okay, now, what are we going to do next? Well, he said here, verse 4. Oh, no, he's still... Okay, this is verse 3. And Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land, in the wilderness have shut them in. Okay, we got that, right? It's real simple. They can't get in. They can't get out. They're stuck. And God said, I'm going to harden the heart of Pharaoh. And he's going to run right after them. With, let's say, verse 7. And he, Pharaoh, took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt, the captains of every one. That's a lot, right? Keep on going down. When the Israelites saw them, the Israelites were what? Happy? They were terrified. What was their accusation? Do you remember what it was? Are there no graves? So what do they have in their mind? They're just going to be slaughtered there. And Egypt's army is going to go back and let their bodies just stink and rot all along the place. No one's even going to bury them. No one's going to take time burying because no one will be around to bury them. They'll all be dead. What's so funny about this? When Pharaoh said, okay, what have we done? We let them go, right? Even after he lost his own son. And your mind's saying, where's his brain? Did he realize that? And his men, the captains he went and took with, and his army, the men, they lost their firstborn. There wasn't a single house in all of Egypt that didn't mourn the loss of a son. So all these men, on around the seventh day, that's what happened here. They're all coming there to do something. Now what took place? Well, they saw in verse 12, they saw the Israelites, right? I mean, they saw the Egyptians, right? And this is when they yelled out and they said, "Let us alone that we may serve Egypt. Why are you put us here for? We told you to leave us alone," right? Keep those things in mind as we keep on going, because now I'm going to do something to you. Verse 13, Moses said something. Verse 13, "Fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation or the deliverance of Yahuwah, which he will show you today. And you'll never see those Egyptians again. So hold your peace." That's a pretty strong word, wouldn't you think? We don't necessarily have to go on with the story, but just pay attention for just a moment. This is where the word "not" freed you from bondage. What is happening here? Salvation. Now, reflect back on your life for just a moment. A lot of you, which I don't know personally, that when God began to deal with you, were you, in your heart, speak to yourself, afraid to go fast the way of God? Because everything around about you is dear and special. Had a hard time making that transition from, this is where God wants me to be, and I'm over here, and I'm not quite sure I want to go there. I lose my friends, I lose my relatives, I lose my family, I lose everything. I'll even lose my job. I lose respect. I lose honor. Ellie?
For the 3 months preceding finally getting a minister to baptize me, every day I thought God was going to kill me. Every night I'd wake up and I'd cry and I thought he was going to kill me. And I was so distressed that they wouldn't hurry up and baptize me because I knew he was going to kill me before they did. And I was terrified and I couldn't shake it. No matter where I went, I knew that it was hanging over my head. And then after I was baptized and started walking, the fear left. But I was terrified.
In the same way, you're afraid to move toward God. At the same time, you're dwelling in sin, and you know what's going to happen. You're going to get killed. You have to make a choice, right? So you're freed from bondage, but you're not yet in salvation. God freed them from bondage on the first day of unleavened bread. On the seventh day, brought them salvation.
I was just going to make a note. I went through the same thing right before getting baptized, but it wasn't, I didn't think God was. I thought Satan was going to kill me before I could get to being saved. I didn't think God was going to take me out.
This is the Lord of the North.
But the other thing I wanted to say is when we are faced with the decision where we are going to turn our life over to God, you don't really know that you're going to lose all your friends. You lose all your family. You lose everything. That comes as you walk it. And so it's easier, I think, at times to make that decision because you don't know all those pieces are going to come yet.
Right.
Versus what they were doing, it was right there in front of them.
Yeah. I'm not saying everybody has that same feeling, but each one of us goes through a different direction where God's leading us that we are afraid to do something before we commit ourselves to the Word of God. And we have known, I mean, for myself personally, quote, I knew my mother was going to go against me. I knew she was going to attack me. And did that frighten me? That my own mother? Yes. She's my mother. I respected her. Yes.
When I didn't count the cost of what it was going to be when I came, but I didn't know. Well, at different times I heard, come as you are, but I thought I had to come already clean, ready, presentable, and I had picked a person that I thought I was going to be like, and she was like Mother Teresa. Oh, my. And she sat so fine and proper, and I really thought that's what was going to happen when I came, that I would have a transformation of who I was. I had no idea, and I didn't know how that was going to happen. So coming to him, I thought, well, I'll have a soft voice, and I'll walk lightly, and I won't carry a stick anymore. And someone in during a woman's meeting told me that's not what's going to happen, and I was shocked. So now I walked it out.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
When God speaks to Moses and tells him, I've heard the cries of the people of Israel. The people of Israel had no idea what they were crying for. They said, God, save us, help us. We're in this miserable situation. But they didn't know, all right, the process which you're going to be saved is really tough.
Yeah.
And you're going to regret it.
All they want is...
Right.
Just
they were expecting, everybody, you're all free. Let's go home. Great. We're all happy and content. But as many pointed out, the initial decision, okay, God, help me, or go walk to God, that's the easy part, relatively speaking, compared to the actual going through and what you experienced. Like, you look back.
For about 100
I just
years.
Did what? What did you just walk me through? That was not what my mind said was going to happen when I told you to come save me. I was expecting a simple, easy process, not this complicated, convoluted way where everybody dies and it's a whole
just miserable. Deliver me and let me continue and do what I'm doing. Carrie.
It kind of makes me think of holding a grudge. A lot of times, you know, somebody will do something that, you know, hurts us really badly, and it gets to a point where we think we're the only one that's going to hold justice to them. Like, as long as we hold on to our grudge and as long as we remember the wrong they did us, then that's their payment. That's their retribution. They have to pay their, you know, that's the justice against them. And it can bring problems into our lives. We don't realize where the problems are coming from. And then we pray and we say, God, you know, please save me from this. We don't realize we have to let go of the anger and the bitterness in order to get rid of those problems. And it's fear. It's fear to even not be able to lay that down because we think if we let go of it, then that person's never going to get their comeuppance a lot of times. And sometimes it just becomes an old friend that we've had for a long time we're afraid to let go of because we're comfortable living there.
Comfortable living there. Just take away this problem. You know, if only I didn't get taxed so heavy, I could live this country. Really? More to it than that, yes.
Oh, I just remember the heavens, you know, talking to me like, do you really want to do this? You know, and
yeah.
Is this, you know, and continuing to walk in that direction was like every step I took, I figured this is death to me if I go that way. So, you know, it's a fear. It's a real fear, but it's like the sun and the moon and the stars and the heavens are all talking to you. It's like, stop it now. Cut it out.
Yeah. And then we come to this point. Oh, you had another comment?
Sorry. You know, there's a lot of parallels for me in this story and my own personal here and walk. First coming into Christianity, it was kind of, I mean, for me, I was getting out of a wheelchair and trying to get out of physical bondage and everything. There's like a honeymoon with it. I mean, it was great to discover this is just Jesus and there was some
salvation.
There was some great things that were there, and being part of a church and all this. But the huge shift, and it's been almost 10 years later, when it's like, all right, now I really want to find out what it means to serve the Lord. And as I started walking this path, almost 9 months.
We're gonna talk about this today.
Walking and now really, all right, following the commandments and the Torah. I mean, really, then the flock really scattered.
So I want you to kind of put yourself in the shoes of the Israelites for just a minute. I mean, try your very best to be as scared to death because they were. There was no hope. There was no salvation. There was no turning forward nor turning back. You can't turn left, you're going to be dead. Now your children are going to be dead with you. Your grandchildren are going to die also. Now that was the fear that was embedded in them. Can we just read here a statement, you know? Are there no graves in Egypt? You know, they were afraid. Now, God had not put us into that. Maybe some of you, yes, I don't know. Put us into that kind of same exact trap, like Paul called it. A place where you cannot turn left or right. You can't go backwards. And then the Lord comes along and says, go straight. What? There's water out there. We're drowned. You know? And this is what Moses said. Stand fast. See the salvation of the Lord. We know the story, right? The wind came, dried out the sea, and they walked on dry land. You remember that? We don't want to go with that today. But now that salvation, they're on the other side. It's like today, let's put ourselves in that position. They traveled at night through the Red Sea. By the time the morning came, they're already across. And along comes the Egyptians. Now, why were the Egyptians in the water, in the pathway? Well, because remember the dark cloud kept them from coming? And the dark cloud lifted up. And what did they see? They saw what? The path. Now remember, Baal Shittim was the greatest god of military might and strength to the Egyptians. And Baal Shittim was the one that protecting the border. And so what do you think they thought of? Oh, he opened us for us to continue pursuing and to kill him. And then what happened? It didn't occur. All of a sudden there was mud. All of a sudden the wheels came off. All of a sudden the horses were dead. It wasn't their God, it was Yahuwah that was brought that upon them. And they died, right? Now it's like when Carmel mentioned about, think the devil was going to kill her. Well, stop and think for just a moment. God stopped Satan himself in your life. Right? He stopped. It's not that Satan's always there. He stopped him. We have to kind of look back on our own life, realize that the Satan has no power, no jurisdiction, no authority over us to do anything. And we sang a song today, right? Oh, we didn't sing a song. We had a song sung for us. Of Miriam. All right? And what'd they do? They were happy. They were danced. So it was a joyous day for them. It was so sudden, so hard. Of course, that was the very same time Moses wrote his psalm, which we don't need to go back there and read today. But I want you to go to chapter 15 for a moment. Because now, after salvation, after you, quote, were saved, end of quote, and accepted the salvation, is that the end of the story? Now let's look and see a little bit that we can understand, because every place, the book of Numbers says this, that every place they encamped was a place where Yahuwah said, stop here. And they stopped. So now they left. Today. Well, they would have left actually tomorrow on their journey or the next day, whatever it was. They may stay there for a couple of days. I don't know. Doesn't matter. So let's go to chapter 15. Let's go to verse 22. I want you to kind of put yourself now in a different world. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of a place called Shur, which means a borderline. And they went 3 days into the wilderness and found no water. No, salvation came, right? The first place their God took them was where? Well, there was water, but not water to drink. Right? And they came to Moses, and they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter, deadly, basically, could kill you. Therefore, the name of the place is called Marah. Verse 24, and the people murmured. They just got through being saved. And they were complaining about a very important issue. Why was this so important to them? Huh? To them.
Because God was going to show them what to, and one more point of what to do when they're in trouble.
Okay. Any other comment?
Well, if I had my kids and all my herd, which equaled life and future finances and stuff, I need to make sure all that's provided and taken care of, and the water is going to sustain that.
Okay. Remember, God led them there. Yes.
The salvation that happened when they crossed the Red Sea was a moment.
Right.
It was just there. Okay, that happened. Great. But now you need a sustaining process, which water sustains us all. You need a sustaining process to continue on your salvation mode, to continue on trusting and believing, not in God, but actually just believing Him, believing God, believing what He said He would do. So the salvation of the moment in crossing the Red Sea was great, but that's the past now. You need something that lasts longer, that continues on. And the water is a great example of the Spirit of God coming. Because when Yeshua died, that's great, that was a moment in time which He saved us, but that's not lasting, that's a moment in time. You needed something longer, something that lasted for a longer period of time. In this case, they use the example of water to indicate that symbolism.
So, what took place? Now I said, Moses, take this tree, throw it in there. And guess what? They could drink it. All of a sudden they had a great blessing from God. But some of them drank the bitter water, and what happened to them? They got sick. Why did God have them get sick for? What was the first thing He wanted to teach them? I am your healer. Right? Keep this in mind, because God says, I make sick and I heal. I kill and I bring back to life. Right? In the prophets. So, put yourself there. Now, put yourself in life. Now, some of you may have to take back some time in your world, but when you first started moving this direction, you finally accepted the salvation, quote, end of quote, and some of us had to face the first trial. What is that first trial? What was their first trial? To trust God that He will heal you. Trust God. He will heal you. Now, spiritually speaking, we have to ask within ourselves that the water of Marah, He led me to a place that would sicken me. And then He turned around and He healed me. I don't want any testimony here, but just try to picture. Now, we're talking physical illness, perhaps, but a spiritual illness, all you were done is out of salvation. You got salvation. What is still confronting you? doubt. You're questioning. You wonder whether God will really and truly fulfill what he said he's going to do. The first thing God does is test you out. We know why he tests them out, see whether they'll keep his commandments. We know that. And so, in your life, somewhere along the line, you're either sick at heart and soul and mind, or maybe even physically sick. And sometimes you think you've brought it upon yourself. Really? Maybe God brought it upon you. So you would turn to God and say, heal me. Heal my soul, heal my mind, heal my flesh, heal whatever you see. This is making me sick. I'm going to die. And he says, I am your healer. He's just not healer of good eyes, you know, bad stomach, headaches. He's there to heal your soul and your spirit. Your spirit's not very strong. And the Word of God says, blessed are those who have a weak spirit, a poor spirit. Why? For they shall see the Creator of heaven and earth. All right? Now let's go on. What was the next thing, the journey? Verse 27. Plain as day, right? They came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. Wow, 12 wells and 70 palm trees. Just the opposite. That was the first place they went to, right? So after God healed them, he took them to the most wonderful, a very wonderful place. Good water. There's even fruit to eat. The land was plush. You could stay there and live if you wanted to. However, the cloud moved. So he gives you a blessing. He said, yes, I've healed you. By the way, I'm going to give you something now in exchange. I'm going to show you something that you are not aware of, but I am aware of. I'm going to show you how wonderfully I will bless you. Now, when you in your life, after you figured out where God has healed your soul, healed your spirit, and you feel really relieved by it, what was the next thing God gave you? Probably a great blessing. Another one. One you loved. Say, this is a great one. Right? Is your life that way? We can go on and on and on with these things, but I want to kind of bring out a point here. Then on the day after the journey, verse 16th chapter, starting in verse 1, and then God took them someplace else. And he says, and they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of house of Israel came into a place called the wilderness of Sin. That's an odd place, right? What was that place like? What?
Thorns.
Thorns, you say.
Fleshly desires.
What?
Getting toward your flesh.
That's not what it tells you.
It says they're in the wilderness.
Don't. It's not the Hebrew word for cutting short, no, falling short of the mark. It's the name of a place, but it's spelled different. It's not, what's the Hebrew word for sin? Hata. It's not hata.
Okay.
All right. It's a different word. So don't get it confused. Now, as we read this thing on, verse 2, the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and in that particular place called Wilderness of Sin. And what happened? And the children of Israel said unto them, Adam, Moses and Aaron, would Elohim, would to Elohim we had died in the hands of Elohim in the land of Egypt. Remember the blood doorpost? And inside that house was life. Outside that house was death. And they said, it'd be better off if we'd never put blood on our doorpost. Would have just killed us like it did the Egyptians. Than be here in this particular location called the wilderness of sin. So how bad was that place? Let's read on. Find out. Because see, now once God gives you a blessing, he could turn around and give you a really hard, difficult, and almost impossible, which really truly was, task. That you had no physical strength, they didn't have physical strength to overcome it. There was no way they could challenge, they couldn't go back or forward, they're going, as far as they're concerned, die. Right there. Has God ever, don't answer the question, just inside your soul, mine, has God ever challenged you with such a situation that you just soon rather be dead than continue on living? Whether it's, whatever it is, food, clothing, shelter, help, whatever it is. You say, oh, my life is so miserable. I can't stand it anymore. I just want to quit. Right? Remember the parable that Yeshua talked about, the seed? Some fell upon what? Dry places. Some fell upon stones. And some fell amongst thorns and thistles. And then some fell upon three locations. 100-fold, 60-fold, and 30-fold. Not all of them. Apostle Paul talked about all those who left from Egypt. Not all survived when they first left. They didn't survive. Because they were like the highways and the byways. No life was there. This is their complaint. Okay? Because they had plenty of food, flesh pot, and they had all the wonderful things, food to eat, they had bread to eat. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. There wasn't any crops out there. There wasn't any palm trees out there. There wasn't even water. Oh, I think they had water. I don't know. We'll talk about that. Something was gone from them. They just received a great, wonderful blessing of the 12 wells and 70 palm trees. And now God takes them where there's nothing there and they are, they say, hungry. There was nothing there for them to eat. Now we look back on it, oh, this is a rotten attitude, a rotten attitude, rotten attitude. Because we had this wonderful thing called insight, which God gave to us because we read the hindsight. Now we got insight because God gave us the hindsight in the first place. You know, we look back on it and we judge these people. And we don't really look at what is happening to them and look and see what is in our life. And I know that some of us, I know I can speak for myself, won't tell you what it was, that I figured it's all over with for me. I can't change the situation. Beyond my power, my mind, my wisdom, everything is gone. And then, strange though it may seem, God gave me something to eat. My, what a day. And then he says now, verse 4, and then Yahuwah spoke to Moses, saying, behold, I will rain bread from heaven to you, and the people shall go out and gather in a certain rate every day. That it may, that, why? Because they're hungry? Why did he do this for? He brought them to the place of nothing. And they were hungry. In a sense, they probably, a little child, a little boy, a little girl, was probably crying for something to eat. We don't think of that because we think of grown adults like 80, 90-year-old people. They can handle it, right? What about that little baby? What about that three-year-old? What about your own young kids and your own young daughter, your grandchildren? They're hungry. And you know when a little child is really hungry, what does he do? He cries, complains, and he's downright irritated until you feed him something to eat. Also, he's happy, right? Now, remember David Tolman? After you finally get something to eat, all of a sudden, we're all down moody that day. We're not real strong. And all of a sudden, the spirit goes up and everybody's happy. Yes.
The first picture, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness.
Okay. Would you tell a four-year-old that? Would you tell a three-year-old that? Would you tell a six-month-old baby that? You think they're going to hear it? See, we look at this thing, it's just all these adults. We don't register. Children are involved with this whole picture. And the parents are hearing the complaints, not only what they're complaining about, but also hearing complaints of their own son, their own daughters, their own babies. Even a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old still needs food. But the adult can withstand a day or two without food. But after a while, the child feels it quick and fast. You know? So I'm trying to put you in the shoes of what it was kind of like. And on a spiritual plane, physical plane, they could do nothing about it, right? God sent them there. They didn't wander into this wilderness of sin, didn't know where they're going. They went wherever that cloud took them. And when that cloud stopped, they stayed. So it was a test, wasn't it? In your life, after baptism, after today, after days of unleavened bread, after days of sincerity and truth, God's going to put you on a test. Have you done this cycle before?
Yeah.
Are you ready for the next cycle? You're going around and here, I met that one. I trust God that one. And now he's going to start, wait a minute, what's this? What? What is this here for? To test me out. Or to test you out. Test all of us as a congregation out as he did ancient Israel. That's why this day is so important. Yes, it's the day that they were saved. It's the day that they were delivered. The day that they had salvation. But I wanted to carry you a little bit farther forward. It's going to go to Chevrolet, but we're not talking about Chevrolet today. We're talking about the pattern. I don't care whether the time is this, time is that, whether we're off, whether we're on. It's the message that God has in mind first. What does he want to tell us? And of course, what is the first thing here that he tells us? It shall be come to pass that on the sixth, verse 5, come to pass the sixth day that you shall prepare that which they bring in, and they it shall be twice as much on as they gathered in daily. Now, what they gathered in was called Omar. I told you last Sabbath, Omar is about 2 liters. It weighs about 5, maybe 6 pounds of barley. And we talk about the bowl I had held up. It's not very much. But each one got a barley or more, depending upon the size of their family. All right? If two of them had the large family, they got 2 bowls. Or big, giant family, maybe they got 3. And once again, if it was just you, you could celebrate it with, or share it with somebody else that doesn't have any, and you can share that bowl of whatever this manna was. Now, did this manna give them life? Did the manna give them life? Well, gave them life all the way until they entered the promised land, right?
Yeah. It's nutritional, I think.
Well, they had other things to eat too, by the way. They had other things they could eat too. They'd eat their own cattle, they'd eat their own beef or whatever they had. They can kill and eat that because they didn't live that long. 40 years later, cows don't live that long. Sheep don't live that long. People might live longer. So he comes along here and he says, okay, of course we kind of know the story, right? And then he said about the quail. And we always look negatively at that quail, don't you? Downright rotten people. Downright self-centered, think of themselves. Right. Hungry. They weren't really hungry. They ate anything they want. No. God put them in a place called the wilderness of sin where there's nothing there. Nothing. And he tested them out for 2 weeks in a row. Right? What was the test about? What? Which day is the Sabbath day? Now, put it in our lives. I hate to say something, maybe offending people here, but at the very same time, when your family is needing food, or you think it needs food, and you say, okay, I gotta work. Have you passed the test? Remember, in the wilderness, they had nothing. You have something. They had nothing. I have something. They have nothing. And so 2 weeks in a row, he said, I'll give you twice as much on the sixth day. And it's not going to rot. I'm going to provide for you. So the manna was not an issue of them keeping alive. The manna was to teach them the Sabbath. So from that point in time in history, all the way until the end of the promised land, guess what day they knew the Sabbath was? 40 years later, they really got the message 40 years later, right? Not that they didn't seem to complain after this, but we understand what I'm saying. Rely upon God. But my child needs food. My child needs a lunch. My child needs a loaf of bread. Really? You know, we have a hard time picturing in our mind that God would even put, quote, children at risk. At the same time, his object wasn't to teach a child what day Sabbath was. His object was to teach the house of Israel what day Sabbath was. They didn't have it. They didn't understand it. Although they've been going through a Sabbath journey every up to this point, they didn't picture it. So now comes this point. Now I'm going to hammer this one. And first thing he said to them, I'm your healer. Next thing, he gave a great, great, great blessing. The third thing was, I'm taking it all away. I'm taking it all away. What's left? I'm taking it all away. Remember what Job said? God giveth and God takes away. We think it's the world. We think it's the devil. We think it's demons. We think it's rotten people. No, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. You're living within his world today. You're not living in the world of the world. Living in his world. So when God takes away something, what's the purpose of it? For you to pay attention to what's going on. And so you can respond in your own world, your own life. Now these are the days of purity and truth. Many of us have been around for many years now. And so we know this. We got this picture. It's well in our brain. Can you teach your children that? How will you teach your child? That's why it's kind of important in the book of Exodus to go through this thing and say, you know, I'm going to teach you, my son or my daughter, this is what it's about. Well, we always take about the murmuring, complaining. I will tell you, I am not strong enough as a man, even at my age or even younger, when there's nothing to eat and my children need food, to stand and say, okay, God bless me. I'd murmur. I said, what are we doing? Why did you put us here for? The cloud's not moving. The cloud's still here. Why don't you get us out of here? And for 2 solid weeks, let's get us out of here. Nope. I'm going to feed you manna for 2 weeks. Not only for 2 weeks, but those 2 weeks solid. Then they try to do all sorts of things with it. You know, you can boil it, you can roast it, you can cook it, you can do anything. They had ability to make fire. But that was it. But there was nothing there in this place called wilderness of sin. And so we know the story about the quail. Okay, in your frustration or your murmuring, because I've taken it all away from you now. Okay, so I'm going to give you something back. Here, a bunch of birds. Go eat a bunch of birds. You're hungry, go eat a bunch of birds. And some of them got sick, some of them died. Eating the thing, right? Raw, died. The book of Psalms, I think, records that information. All right. Now, you know, it's Aaron was the spokesman, and so Aaron was the one that was teaching these people this, explaining to them. You know, in verse 14, and there the dew that laid was gone up. Behold, upon the face of the wilderness of sin, a small round thing. Small as a hoard frost on the ground. Not very big. Now they had to pick up a whole gathering of a whole omer. Full. About 2 liters full. And of course what happened there, verse 22. When they tried it again, Moses said, don't go out there on the Sabbath. So next down verse. Next Sabbath, what'd they do? They went out there and gathered. And God says, you just lost the test, didn't you? You just lost the test. So sometimes in our life, quote, since we got away with not keeping the Sabbath this time, we don't have to do it next time. Right? That's a message of the wilderness, of sin. It's aimed at the Sabbath. God took all the blessings away and aimed at the Sabbath. Is that important with God? Oh, yeah, of course, but He knows my weakness. He knows my children need something. Therefore, I'm only flesh, right? We do this in our world, right? Now let's go on here. We're almost finished for today. I hope you don't mind. This won't be super long today. But then, doesn't have to be. After salvation, God is going to test you out. And by the way, this is just a little bit of testing here. He tests out different ways with different people on different issues in their life. It always will be there. It never will be removed. Not because you are strong and capable, because you are poor in spirit. And you need God's spirit within you for you to endure the hardship, as hard it was for the Israelites for 2 weeks. God can make it 2 years for you, 10 years for you, or 40 years for you to get your ways. That's not a worry. I just tell you, I look back on it as, wow, that's a long, long test. Maybe I could take it for 40 days. 40 years? Too far down the road. Now, it's chapter 17. Another interesting approach. Now, we're all still on our journey, right? He put us in the wilderness of sin. Tell us which day the Sabbath was. Took everything else away we had. Took the blessings away from the time we had the wells and the palm trees. Took that away. And he says, and the congregation of children journeyed from the wilderness of sin after their journey according to the commandment of Yahuwah. Oh, okay, so they go in the same direction that God wants them to go. So when we read the stories of Exodus, even up to this point, all the way to verse 9, to chapter 19, we're seeing the actions of the Creator of heaven and earth, not the actions of people. We might see the response people do. Did God listen to their murmuring? Oh, once in a while, He said 10 times the maximum He did that with. And if that's it, no more. While they were murmuring, did they really get what they murmured about? Yeah, some of them got sick and some of them died. Yeah, he'll give you what you want. Yeah. See what's going to happen to you. So their heart, their soul, their mind, their spirit was not connected with God, because God didn't want them to be connected with Him at that point in time. What about you?
It's like if you don't pass the test the first time, He just keeps recycling it until you get it.
Once you are, quote, called of God. And Israel, for 40 years, are recycling for 40 years. You understand what you just got to say? And, of course, the people complaining here now, we had a little sin, and they went to a place called Rephidim. We talked about what that meant. I'm not talking about what it means today. It's not important. But they went to someplace else. Now, they're very interested about this thing. God sent Moses ahead for him to get, drinking about no water. Remember? Sin, no food, no hungry. Here, Rebecca, no water. Well, is this Meribah a little again? No water? There was no water. There wasn't even bitter water. There's nothing. And then how long do you think a child would like to say, "I'm thirsty, Daddy!" And say, "I have no water." You'd be upset. Of course, you're going to blame Moses and Aaron because that's the only two people you know doing all this stuff. Moses and Aaron doing it all. Because they never saw the hand of God in their life at all. Yeah, there's that cloud. Yeah, okay. They never pictured it from the point of view. All they saw was, in the one time, I don't know if it was this one, but no place. He says, "Why are you, telling the people of Israel, why are you charging against us?" Meaning he and his brother. "You're doing it against the creator of heaven and earth." Did they listen? We don't know. We don't know the full story. Probably some of the elders did. Anyway, Moses had to go ahead with two or three other men, and he had to strike this rock. You remember that rock? Split open. I've heard people say, "What it was a sand rock. The rock had a lot of sand in it, and it was holding water. Came to be a river, but beside the point, it's a mighty big rock holding off a lot of water, and a big river came out of it." Anyway, it's a funny comment. But that's beside the story. We're not going there right now. But it says, verse 5, "And Yahuwah said unto Moses, Go on before the people, and take with thee the children, the elders of Israel, and thy rod." Not the staff, the rod. Right? To the rock at Horeb, "And you shall smite the rock, and there shall come forth water out of it, that the people may drink." So Moses did so. Remember, he went ahead. They didn't know where he was going. But God had some of the elders go with him so they would be witness to the striking of the rock. Moses didn't pull a fast one. They saw it. We don't know the names. Doesn't matter. But I tell you, that was a really incredible witness for them to see. I would think it'd be an incredible witness to see anyway. And out comes this rock. Out comes this water. Then I'm asking you a question. Now the water's there. We're still at the very same place with no water, but now there's water. What was the next thing that happened? You don't remember? We're not at Mount Sinai yet. Though we got water now, we're not at Mount Sinai yet. Verse 8. War. War. Killing. Death. We won't go through that story, but you know, when he held the rod up and he got too hard down the camp, Israel was dying. They're being killed. And the two men held the hands up and they were able to hold that rod up and they lived. And they kept fighting, and they wiped out Amalek, at least made them run and scared. Now, ask yourself a question here now. What was the purpose of this? Did God not know? Did God say, "Oh, what? Who are they? Where'd they come from?" Or did he know they were coming? He saw them coming. He ordered them to come. like he did Pharaoh, ordered him to come after him. To do what? To give and show his salvation. Now we're at war. Why was it important that Moses hold the rod up?
To show who the strength came from. It comes from God.
Interesting statement. Very interesting statement. Next thing I want you to remember. When Moses did this, when Moses not only struck the rock and water came out, and there was witnesses them to see him do this, and then war broke out, the people didn't see the hand of God. What did they see? The hand of Moses. I want to ask you a question. When Moses was to sit down to Pharaoh in the first place, what did the Creator of Heaven say that he's going to do? I'm going to make you an Elohim. And Aaron is going to be your prophet. Now, to this day, let me ask you a question. Is Moses still spoken about today? Is it because, why? Huh? God picked him. And we are to listen to Moses. Why are we listening to Moses for? Because what did God say about Moses when Miriam did the job? I speak face to face with him. I hide nothing from him. But everybody else, including you, Miriam, and your brother, it's going to be in visions, it's going to be in dreams. That's it. Why did he want Moses to be so well known around the world for all these thousands of years later? What's so important about this man named Moses? When Moses did the breaking of the stone, and they saw witnesses have him do this, something penetrated into the minds of the Israelites.
God had Moses be this astronomically huge figure, the same way he had Jesus be this huge astronomically huge figure. They both do the same thing. And if you make making Moses so profound and so huge is the exact mirror image of making Jesus so profound and huge. I mean, which one's talked more of?
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm not real sure. They both talked pretty extensively about it in all religions, almost throughout the whole world.
There's one thing they had in common. Moses was what kind of a man? A meek man. What was Yeshua? A meek man. Didn't fight back. He preached the word of God, told what the Father said, but he didn't fight back. And he died being a weak man. We have this song called El Shaddai. The man who wrote that song understood it. He says, by the weakness of your son. Because his son had no strength. Unless God gave it to him. Moses couldn't hold that up. And God didn't even hold him up. He had two other men hold him up. But they saw a victory. They saw a victory. Yes, Sean.
A big attribute of still acknowledging Moses, because even Yeshua says, if you would have believed me, if you would have believed Moses, you would have believed me because he wrote about me.
Okay. I want you to drop down. I'm ending my message here today. Verse 9. 19th chapter, verse 9. We're in that 19th chapter, verse 9. And Yahuwah spoke unto Moses, lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee and believe in thee forever. Really? Did you notice that? Believe in Moses forever. Oh, I thought we were supposed to believe in Jesus. We don't have to believe in Moses anymore, right? Moses is gone. The law is gone. We just listen to the Messiah now because the law has been passed away. It's no longer in force. It's no longer there. We don't have to believe anything about Moses anymore. Moses is a dead person. He doesn't exist. Why is his name even in the New Testament for? Why is it in the book of Revelations for? Oh, because they... Now listen, do you ask yourself a really honest question? Don't have to answer it. Inside of you, when you read, especially, I say Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, do you believe what it says? The reason why you believe what it says isn't because Jesus came on the scene. You believe what he said because it was Moses. How much faith do you have in him? A lot. And so on these days of purity and truth, our minds must be clean and pure. And the day of crossing over, and now there's salvation, there are other things that God has in mind for us to do, all the way up to the time of breaking that rock with witnesses. Moses can't create that. And these witnesses, certain elders, he didn't name who they were. I got a funny feeling what two of them were. That's beside my point. They were witnesses. And they came back. And the people had to wash their clothes. They had something to drink. The baby is no longer crying out for water. It was so much. It was a huge river. So, I just want to tell you this. That when we think about the seventh day of unleavened bread, it really is a beginning in one way. Because when this day passes, you're going to go on to hearing the word that Moses has preached. Why do you accept the words of Moses? Because you believe in him. You believe he's not a liar. You believe is the truth. Now, people can translate his words in any which way, shape, or form you want. And you have to kind of learn a little bit about ancient Hebrew to figure it out what it was really said there. But I just want to leave you for today. This is the only message we're going to have today, by the way. And I hope you've had some different way of looking at things for a viewpoint. Before I close, are there any questions? Any comments? Any thoughts? Oh, I wonder if that was two of them over here.
I was thinking about, they didn't stay out in the open. They had tents, right?
They had what?
They had tents. Where did those tents come from?
What?
The tents. When the people were out there,
where did all
those tents come from?
Well, you know, I'll
yesterday
tell you one
I
thing.
Thought that.
How did... I'll be honest with you. I think the women built the tents, my personal opinion. Well, God gave them the gift of how to do that, how to weave that piece of whatever it is, ground, the little seed. Oh, now here's, I got string now. Now, it wasn't real narrow stuff that you buy at a local store, you know. It was much thicker. Yeah, and they knew how to weave. That's not new knowledge. And women were very good at doing that. You know, the women were very, very much a part of doing an awful lot of the work. We're not going to go there, but if you go into building of the tabernacle itself, guess who's weaved the material? It wasn't Moses. It was the women. And she had a question.
I just wondered if this is also considered a new year. I mean,
actually, no. New year began earlier in the first. We're in the end. We're in the 21st day
of the new year.
Yeah, it's okay. Very important to know the 10th day, and the 14th day, the 15th day, the 17th day, and the 21st day. Just want to bring in that our journey is yet to be continued. As it happened to them, it happens to us. on an individual and perhaps very private way.